Last Sunday, it was really cool time for us. We went out to Tennessee performing the wedding for Christy Cosentino, no longer Christy Cosentino, now Christy Alford. Actually, Christina Alford. She told me she's all grown up now and she's not Christy anymore. Wow. Anyways, we're out in Tennessee for that, and they just had a reception here yesterday. But after that time in Tennessee, it was, we're out there, and that was a Saturday, and I looked and I said, what's the closest baseball park to Knoxville, Tennessee? Because I love going to baseball games, as you may be aware. And so I wanted to go see a baseball game on Father's Day. I thought that'd be a great way of spending the day. So closest one to Knoxville is actually Atlanta, Georgia. And they have a ballpark down there called SunTrust Park. And so I told my wife and daughter, I said, for Father's Day, I want to go to the baseball game. We'll go down there to Atlanta. Well, I don't know if any of you have ever been to Atlanta in June, but don't. And it was like an inning and a half in, and it's just sweltering. We had good seats in the shade. It wasn't, that like that. But it was so stinking hot and muggy and miserable. And I could see the expression on my wife and daughter's faces, and it made me to realize I've made a terrible mistake in judgment. And so, that's the inspiration for this message this morning. Liberty and justice for our worst mistakes. All right? You guys want to hear the liberty? Now, we've been studying the book of Judges throughout this year, and there's lots of stories in the book of Judges, some that are really, really, really bad, and today's is a really, really bad one. But to look at this bad story and to realize this is the worst mistake that someone could commit. And so I started thinking about that idea of our worst mistakes. And so before I launch into the text this morning, I want you to think about what is the worst mistake that you ever made, and what was the reason for making that mistake? And this is a hard question, because I know personally, with my mistakes, the worst mistakes I've made, I try to bury them. And I don't think about them very often, or I try not to think about them very often, or maybe they're so bad that I think about them all the time. And so I want you, at the very beginning of the message this morning, think about the worst mistake that you make. And I'll just tell you a quick story about the first story I thought of in my own life for my worst mistake. And spoiler alert, it's not the worst mistake I ever made, but it felt like it at the time. All right, so let me take you all the way back to 1996, long ages ago. And my first job, McDonald's. Yeah? How many of you else had a first job, worked at McDonald's? Anybody work at McDonald's? Yeah? You love throwing those bags of pickles around? A lot of fun. So I was working at McDonald's. I spent about 6 months there, 6 months of career, not quite enough to earn retirement, but I was there working, having a good time, and finally, got another job and said, okay, it's time to leave this job. And so I put in my 2 weeks notice, a good employee, and I came down to my last day working at McDonald's. By the way, McDonald's is still there, the one on Poway Road, right? Beat out Burger King. How do you like that? So I'm over there, it's my last day, and I decided, you know what, I hate these stupid shoes that they make us wear. Like, you have to buy these special shoes to wear, right, to work at McDonald's, and they have like a special, obnoxiously terrible look, and allegedly they're to help you, I don't know why. You have these special shoes. And I said, I'm not gonna wear these shoes because it's my last day and they can't fire me. Right? They're not gonna, hey, you're wearing the wrong shoes, get out of here. So I decided I was gonna wear my shoes that I always wore, my comfortable regular shoes, and that's what I was gonna wear as my last day. Well, it just so happened that day it was actually raining here in Poway, which is very unusual, but it was raining that day and it was pretty wet outside, and which didn't matter because I was working inside. Except, maybe you've had this occasion where you go and you pull up and you have a complicated order in the drive-thru. And in order to keep things going, they say, can you pull ahead and park at this little spot and let the next car come behind you? Anybody ever done that? Right? Jeff, complicated, picky eater, right? Yeah. Yeah. Happens all the time, right? So then what happens is you're out there, they're out there waiting, and then they take a minimum wage employee and they say, go and run the food out to them. Right? So now this is the moment that I realized the reason they make you wear those ridiculous shoes. Because my shoes that I'm comfortable in and I enjoy are not designed with the same kind of sole on the bottom to prevent slippage on wet floor when running fast food out to a waiting car. So this happened, run outside, slip, and just like straight out of a cartoon, whing, and French fries flying through the air as I fall flat on my back right in front of the car waiting to get their food. Terrible mistake. It was awful. And it's haunted me, and I've repressed that memory until now. I've laid it out before you. So. That's a bad mistake, right? Now, all of us realize we've made those kind of mistakes, just foolish, tiny, stupid little things. But what about, like, the really horrible, dastardly, evil things that we have committed? And maybe we committed them out of a motivation. We thought this was the right thing to do at the time. And then looking back said, oh my goodness, what in the world have I done? Well, that's the type of situation that happens here in this story. 2 weeks ago, I introduced the story, this character, this Judge Jephthah, and talked about his broken family unit. He's the illegitimate child of Gilead and he's rejected by his family. And it's a really sad story, but it gets even worse when we see how that ongoing ramifications of the rejection of his family, now how it plays out into this story. And we see it here in Judges chapter 11, verses 29 through 40. So let's follow along. If you don't have a Bible with you, there's a Bible right in front of you, and you're more than welcome to take that Bible home with you. And you can also follow on the YouVersion Bible app. But here's what it says in Judges chapter 11, verses 29 through 40. The Spirit of the Lord was upon Jephthah, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh and passed on to Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead, he passed on to the Ammonites. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out from the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the Ammonites shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering. So Jephthah crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them, and the Lord gave them into his hand. And he struck them from Aroer to the neighborhood of Minnith, 20 cities as far as Abel-Karamim, with a great blow. And so the Ammonites were subdued before the people of Israel. Pausing for a second. Great deliverance. That's the whole point of the book of Judges, is you have men of God, women of God who are raised up and who bring about great deliverance for the people of Israel. So we could pause here and rejoice at that moment, except for the fact that Jephthah made a terrible mistake. He made a rash and foolish vow and said, here's what happens, God. If you give me victory, I'm going to give whatever comes out of the doors of my house to you as a burnt offering. And this is what happens. Jephthah came to his home at Mizpah, and behold, his daughter came out to meet him with tambourines and with dances. She was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. And as soon as he saw her, he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You have become the cause of great trouble for me. For I have opened my mouth to the Lord, and I cannot take back my vow. What? What a horrible story. Remember that the setting of the book of Judges is that people did whatever they thought was right in their own eyes. They had so closed off their understanding of God and his word. They were just making it up as they go along. And she says to him, my father, you've opened your mouth to the Lord. Do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, now that the Lord has avenged you of your enemies of the Ammonites. So she said to her father, let this thing be done to me. Leave me alone 2 months that I may go up and down the mountains and weep for my virginity, I and my companions. So he said, go. Then he sent her away for 2 months, and she departed, she and her companions, and wept for her virginity on the mountains. And at the end of the 2 months, she returned to her father, who did with her according to his vow that he had made. She had never known a man, and it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went year by year to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in the year. You know, if I didn't preach, if I would have been here last Sunday for Father's Day, this would have been the message. And I would have just called it Worst Father Ever. Yeah. But instead, I'm calling it liberty and justice for our worst mistakes. Because what in the world, right? This is like the weirdest, worst story ever. Offering up his daughter as a burnt offering, and she's like, let me just go and roam the mountains for 2 months. Like, run away! What are you doing? But she comes back? Like, what? This is just, everything about this story is just bizarre. Bizarre. And again, it's the setting of the times of the book of Judges. Things had gotten so chaotic, so out of order, so disconnected from God that these types of terrible decisions, terrible mistakes were commonplace. And so what the truth of the matter is, we're not all that far removed from the chaos of the book of Judges in our own life, in our own day and age. We still continue to do stupid things. We still continue to make stupid, foolish mistakes. We still continue to do what seems right in our eyes rather than to follow the way of God. And so it's important for us, it's important that when we come together on a Sunday morning, that you hear a message that gives you a hope even for the worst mistakes you've possibly made. And that's what I want to hope to do this morning, is give you some hope regardless of what your worst mistakes are. But let's talk first about our first mistake before we talk about our worst mistake. And our first mistake is how we minimize sin by thinking of it as only a mistake. See, this is one of the things that we do, right? We've sinned, but instead of calling it sin, instead of addressing the depths of it and addressing the reality, we're just like, that was just a mistake. That was just I shouldn't have done that. Now, this takes a lot of effort to do, but I want you to kind of follow along with me. Thinking back to my silly story about McDonald's, right? That's just a silly mistake, right? No, not really. Because as I dissect it and I go deeper and I peel back the rationale, the reason for that mistake, I find that there was a motivation inside of my heart that was far worse than my own comfort. My motivation was a defiance and a rebellion against the authority that had been established over me. In fact, the reason I chose to wear my shoes, what made me comfortable, what I preferred, was not just my own comfort, but it was my rejection, not only of the authority over me, but the authority of God. Because the fact is, no authority is established except by God. Authority itself is designed to reflect the image of God. This is hard to do, man. I don't want to look at my silly mistakes and realize there's actually a sin behind them. But it's true. Because the fact is, we weren't designed, human beings weren't designed to sin. We weren't designed to rebel against the nature of God. We weren't designed to look upon our brother and our sister who is made in God's image and to hate them. And to grow frustrated with them, and to grow angry with them. A few weeks ago, I talked about the silly things that make us angry, and Melissa's here, and she told me she said, you know how you were talking about the silly things that make us angry? I was driving, and the stupidest thing made me angry. And she's probably going to be upset that I'm telling her this, but sorry, if you're upset, you can go to China. Okay. And this was the thing that made Melissa angry, and that's so good, I've got to share it. She said, I was driving home and I got upset that there were so many silver cars. She said, why does everybody have silver cars? Why don't we have some color here? That made her upset. Again, I don't want to talk about your worst mistake and dive deep into the sin behind that. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. But we do things that are just, they're weird, right? We're not, because the fact is, right now, we're not yet fully what we're supposed to be. We won't be that until we see Jesus face to face, until we're completely sanctified, until all of the weird, the sin and the stupidity that plagues our lives right now is completely washed away. That day will come, but in the meantime, we still have all of these things, these mistakes that haunt us. And the worst of those mistakes is this. Our worst mistake is to do in God's name what God neither demands nor delights in. That's the worst mistake that we can make. And it's commonplace. Where we go, I'm going to do this, And I'm going to do it because I'm a believer. I'm going to do it because I want to make God happy. And God's like, no, that does not please me. That is not my will. Probably the most common example of this, and we kind of see it here in Jephthah's life, is where we sacrifice our family in the name of provision or in the name of whatever you want to put in there. But sacrificing the first priority that God has given you in Jephthah's case to gain victory for the Lord, to gain victory for the Lord's people. That's a terrible mistake. God hates this. God hates the sacrificing of our children for even for quote unquote his name, his glory. It was actually really fascinating as I had all this prepared and I heard I got in the car on Friday afternoon and I heard a clip from Dr. Jeremiah down there at Shadow Mountain and his Father's Day message. And he shared how at the beginning of his ministry, as he's trying to establish Shadow Mountain Church, he said that he was just working crazy 80-hour weeks and he was always out there knocking on the doors in the neighborhood and he was always missing dinner. And it got to the point where his wife just said, you can't keep doing this. You can't keep doing this. You're sacrificing your children. You're sacrificing your sons. And he felt the conviction of God to cause him to stop doing that and to reprioritize. And I thought, that is so appropriate. Even a great man of God, he confesses that he's made this worst mistake of sacrificing his family in the name of God. We don't want to do that. That's a terrible mistake that we can make. And now maybe you've never made that mistake, but you've made other mistakes and you've had other sins, other rebellions against God that you don't want to call rebellions. But what hope is there for us? What are we supposed to do? Well, what Jephthah did is he's like, let's back up to his story and this what led to the problem is he made a vow, right? He said, here's the situation. I made a vow, and so now that I've made this vow, my options are this. Either I keep my vow, or I break my vow, and if I break my vow, I go against God. So I'm gonna choose to follow God by keeping this vow, even though this vow is an evil thing in the eyes of the Lord. That doesn't make sense. He made a terrible choice. And the reason he made that terrible choice is because he made the vow, and there's not the same type of frequency within our culture to make vows, right? We've kind of stepped back from vows a little bit because, you know, why do we make vows? Well, vows, what they do is vows are meant to awaken us to the seriousness of the situation. That's the purpose behind vows. It awakens us to the seriousness of the situation. Probably most of you, as I say the word vow, are thinking about wedding vows, right? Wedding vows. And wedding vows are a wonderful thing because exactly that. They awaken us to the seriousness of the situation. You are covenanting your life to the other. You are marrying them. You are entering into a contract where you declare that I will love you for richer or poorer, in sickness and health, until death do us part, you know, for better or for worse, the whole scenario. The vows, you're making that vow, that commitment, because what you are doing when you enter into that relationship with that person is serious. It's serious. And we must acknowledge the seriousness of the situation. Our lives are actually pretty serious business, guys. It's a pretty big deal. So what Jesus taught, rather than saying, I'm going to make a vow for this, I'm going to make a vow for that, I'm going to make a vow for this, is he said, treat your life like a serious situation, because it is. Look at what he says in Matthew 5, 33 through 37. Again, you've heard it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn or what you have vowed. But I say to you, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And you do not take an oath by your head, for you can't even make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than that, anything more than this comes from evil. What's Jesus saying here? Take your yeses and your noes seriously. Just Be straightforward. Be serious. You wouldn't have to be always saying, I swear I'll be there, I'll be there, I'll be there, if you just were there, right? If you were on time, you wouldn't have to make these promises that you can't keep. I'm thinking of I forget his name, Jamie, I think it was. Poor Jamie, right? And his father, you're my number one customer. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jingle All the Way. And he's always promising to, it's obvious to me that none of you have seen that movie. How many of you have seen Jingle All the Way? Okay, good. You remember this? Right? He's always late. He's never keeping his promises. But Turbo Man says, always keep your promises. And so he's like, I swear, I swear, I swear. He was never taking the situation serious enough. We need to instead take to heart James 5:12. But above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Jephthah had no need to make this foolish vow, to say, I will make this offering. I don't need to do that. But here's what happens in our lives. Why do we make these vows? Why do we have to make ourselves more aware of the seriousness of the situation? Because of what it says in Psalm 66:13-14. I will come into your house with burnt offerings. I will perform my vows to you, that which my lips uttered and my mouth promised when I was in trouble. We make vows when we get in trouble, when we are desperate. But this is the irony. We get ourselves into a desperate situation and we start crying out to God. Maybe you've heard of the phrase a foxhole conversion, right? Where somebody's in the middle of war and they're out there and they're forced into battle and they're battling and they see the severity of their situation, that their life is on the line, and they cry out to God, God, if you will spare me, I will devote my life to you. Well, what's happening in that situation, and in almost every situation where we make a rash oath before God, is we're putting ourselves in the driver's seat. We're crying out to God because we don't really, but yet we still don't really trust in God. We're crying out to God on our own terms. God, if you will do this for me, I will do that for you. And God's like, what? I don't need anything from you. I'm God. We need to fall into the situation where we trust in Him regardless. We don't have anything we can offer to Him. What happens in our lives is that we make our worst mistakes when we're in desperate trouble and yet still choose to trust ourselves more than we trust God. That's what Jephthah did. He was in a desperate situation. He had to bring about deliverance, but he trusted in himself more than he trusted in God. And so he made a deal with God. But God didn't really ever accept that deal. God never wanted him to sacrifice his daughter. He didn't need any sacrifices. He didn't need any sacrifices. But what could he have done after he made this vow? How could he get himself out of this situation? I think this is where all of us this morning, when we come into it and say, and we're thinking right now about our worst mistakes, the worst situation that we got into. How can I get myself out of this situation? Right? How can I rid myself of the guilt from this terrible thing that I have done? What can I do to get out of it? Well, you can't promise your way out of it because you're really bad at keeping your promises. And it's most likely that the promise that you make is not even going to be a good promise. It's going to be a promise that amplifies it. So what do we do? Well, I'll tell you a quick weather story in the Bible here. And I have some of the verses up there, but I'm going to skip through them for expediency purposes, but I'm going to give you the label, Saul's stupidity, all right? I love this story in 1 Samuel chapter 14 of Saul's stupidity. And King Saul, at this time, he makes a stupid vow, kind of like Jephthah. He says, the army's about to go into battle, and he says, none of you can eat or drink until God gives us deliverance. Now, his son Jonathan, somehow or another, didn't hear the vow. He didn't hear the promise. And so they're walking through the forest, and Jonathan has a staff, and he sees like a little beehive, and he sees some honey, and he takes his staff, and he sticks it into the beehive, and he brings the staff up, and he eats that honey. And I like this story because that sounds really good to me. Like, I don't know why, but it sounds appealing, except for the bees part. Anyway, So he eats the honey, and it says his eyes brightened, and he was excited, and he was he became more passionate and filled with energy, and he's like, man, I can really do some battle here because honey is awesome. Sounds good. But the people are like, Jonathan, what did you do? Your father said nobody is allowed to eat the honey or to eat anything. Nobody's allowed to eat. Nobody's allowed to drink. And Jonathan's like, man, my dad's an idiot. That was a bad idea. So then what happens is they're about to go into their next battle. And Saul says, all right, God, should we go into battle? And God doesn't answer him. Saul's like, God, why isn't God answering? He says, well, there must be some sin that is keeping God from answering. So let's find out who's the sinner. And I love this. He goes, here's me and my son Jonathan on one side, and here's the rest of the people of Israel. Let's find out who's the sinner. So they consult, and God says, it's over here, you and Jonathan. And Saul's like, what? Uh-oh. Right? And so then he casts the lots between them and says, Jonathan, is it me? Am I the sinner, or is it my son Jonathan? And the lot falls on Jonathan. And Saul says, what have you done? And Jonathan says, I had a little bit of honey. And he's like, oh man, you have made a terrible mistake. Now I have to kill you. I mean, that's a short version, but you can read 1 Samuel 14 and see that's exactly what it was. People made some really bad decisions in those days, right? I got to kill you. But it says this in verse 45. The people rose up and they said, shall Jonathan die who has worked this great salvation in Israel? Far from it. As the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day. So the people ransomed Jonathan so that he did not die. The people ransomed Jonathan so that he did not die. Now, it doesn't give us any indication in how they ransomed him and what price they paid. It doesn't tell us what they did in order to spare Jonathan's life. But we see here in this story a similar situation to Jephthah, but with a better outcome. Because in Jephthah's case, he made a foolish vow, and instead of receiving the ransom of God, instead of receiving the ransom from the people, he actually went through with that vow. In Saul's case, he made a stupid vow, but the people came in and rescued Jonathan from that foolish vow. So we get this idea of what it's going to take to fix our worst mistakes. It's going to take ransom. Ransom. Now, ransom is a word that we ordinarily think of in terms of like kidnapping. So it's probably not the best. We don't have the best concept of the word ransom. But all ransom really means is the price paid that makes things right. That's what ransom means. The price paid that makes things right. What's the price that needs to be paid to fix our worst mistake? How can we have justice from our worst mistakes? How can we make it right? And this is where the gospel comes in with so much liberation and joy. But it starts, before we get to that, the bad news, right? The gospel is the good news, but first the bad news. The bad news is that none of us has enough to pay the price. Not one of us has enough to make up for our worst mistakes. We just don't have enough. Psalm 49, 7 through 9. Truly no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life, for the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice, that he should live on forever and never see the pit. The sin of our lives, all of the compounding interest of our mistakes, is so high, so grievous, so severe, that the psalm says, you can't pay the price. There's not enough money in the world. There's not enough time in the day. There's not enough passion in your body. You cannot do it. That's bad news, right? But I'm not a big fan of bad news. I don't want you to feel like every Sunday morning when you come in, the purpose is to hear bad news. No, your purpose when you come in here to worship Jesus on Sunday morning with your brothers and sisters is to hear the good news, hear the best news, the greatest news. We are messengers of the gospel. The word gospel means good news, and this is the good news. The good news for every single one of us is that Jesus Christ is more than enough to pay the price. You don't have enough to pay the price, but Jesus is more than enough. He is so much greater, so much more worthy. Last night I was reading a story that I read to my daughter way too many times. It's called Frozen. It's about two sisters. One of them gets frozen or something, and her heart gets ice in it, and she's got this cool hairdo. It's awesome. But there comes this scene where she's freezing to death next to a fireplace. It doesn't seem like that's how bad this frozen situation is. And she's got this enchanted snowman named Olaf standing there next to her by the fireplace. But he's a snowman, for those of you who aren't familiar with the story. And snowmen melt next to the fire. And so the princess is like, Olaf, you should leave because you're melting. And Olaf says, some people are worth melting for. And we've read this story and we've seen this movie and we've heard this line 1,000 times, and for some bizarre reason, last night, my daughter says, what does worth mean? I'm like, what, really? What do you mean? And I said, worth is the price. It's the amount that we pay. Worth is the cost. Worth is, Olaf is saying, you're so precious to me. You're so valuable to me. You're so worth it to me. That's what he's saying to her. And she's like, okay, let's keep going. Because she's not all that motivated by my inspiring speeches. But you are. Worth. What's the price what's the ransom that is worth it? Worth it for us. Oh, my heart breaks for Jephthah because he didn't know. Because he didn't know a price worthy enough to make up for his terrible mistakes. To make up for his rash vows. For his foolishness. He had no price worth it. He gave up the thing that was most valuable and precious to him in this life. Which God never wanted him to do. Instead, God has made provision for our worst mistakes. Provision for the thing in your life that you don't want anyone to know about. He's paid the price. Mark 10:45, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. I want you to take a little bit of license with that verse and take out many and put in your name, to give his life as a ransom for you. He pays the price. His death on the cross bears the punishment for your worst mistakes. And he gives you in that place his perfect righteousness. 1 Timothy 2:5-6, there is one God and there's one mediator between God and men. The man Christ Jesus, who gave himself as a ransom for you, which is the testimony given at the proper time. Jesus has ransomed you. He's paid the price for you. He's so loved you. He's so loved you that he's given his life for you. So that even your worst mistakes can be washed away. Not just hidden away, not just kept in the back of the closet, not just not spoken of, not just pretended that they're not a big deal, not just justified or seemingly justified or minimized or excused, no, washed white as snow. This is the purpose of the gospel for your life. The gospel frees us to see both the seriousness of our sin and the supremacy of our salvation. This is what I want you to rest in this morning, to trust in this morning. You can be set free not to pretend like your sin is not a big deal, like it's just a mistake, but to rather recognize it as what it truly is rebellion against God, rejection of his perfection. It's failure to measure up to the holy standards of God. And what he will now offer to you is not to, you can do better, you can try harder, but rather full, free forgiveness forevermore. So just in the last three verses I want to share with you, I want you to see these three things as how you respond. Because you have that worst mistake in your life. I hope by at this point you've allowed that thing, whatever it is, to kind of rise up to a place of consciousness where you're more aware of it than you would like to even admit. And I want you to take that thing, that worst mistake, and I want you to put it into the light of God, the light of the gospel, and allow these three things to happen as a result of presenting that with the gospel. Are you ready? The first is this. Rent hearts. Rent, not meaning what you got to pay every month. Kind of feels that way, though. But torn apart hearts. As it says this in Psalm 51, 14 through 17. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God. O God of my salvation. And my tongue will sing aloud of your righteousness. O Lord, open my lips and my mouth will declare your praises. For you will not delight in sacrifice, or I would give it. Pause on that. God doesn't want you to sacrifice your children. God doesn't want you to sacrifice, God, here's a price I can pay. Here's a vow I can make. He doesn't need that. This is what he wants. You will not be pleased with a burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Allow God to break your heart over your sin. Because the fact is, our tendency in our minimizing of sin is we don't want our heart to be as vulnerable as it needs to be. We're not quite ready to treat our sin as seriously as it needs to be treated. But under the freedom of the gospel, you can bring that into light. You can bring confession into light. You can be free to say, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. A sinner. This wasn't just a mistake. This wasn't just a momentary lapse of judgment. This wasn't just me feeling spiritually depleted or whatever kind of rationale we put on it, however we flower it. This was sin. And sin is not how I'm supposed to live. It's not what you've designed me for. My heart breaks over my sin, God. My heart breaks. And if we have the rent hearts and the broken hearts and the torn to pieces hearts that brings us before God on our knees in tears and lament and sorrow, the next thing that happens as a result of that is we have renewed minds. Rent hearts and renewed minds. As it says in Romans 12, 1 and 2, I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God. See, because we come to him. By the mercy of God, our hearts broken, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. We don't need any more burnt offering sacrifices. Instead, we come to him to live our lives for him, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Renewed minds, thinking differently about our sin, thinking differently about righteousness, thinking differently about what is the will of God. I told you our worst mistake is for us to say, I'm going to do in the name of God what God doesn't delight in. Why do we do that? Because our minds are not renewed. But if we will renew our minds through the word of God, through the covenant promises of his gospel, we'll have a right perspective on this is the will of God. This is the pleasure of God. This is what is the appropriate thing to do. And it changes our behavior. Broken hearts leads to right behavior through the gospel promises. So we have that. Rent hearts, renewed minds, and then finally, rested hands. Rested hands. By this, I mean very simply, you can't earn it. I can't earn it. We cannot make a vow that will get us back to being right with God. Instead, we trust what he's done to make us right with him. We fall back into grace. I know I like that. No, I don't like that expression, fall from grace. You ever heard that expression? You can't fall from grace. You fall into grace. You fall into his working of salvation for you. Your heart's broken. Your mind is changed. And now you're at rest. No longer trying to earn the great deliverance of God, but rather trusting that God has provided for you. Says it this way in Hebrews chapter 4. Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should have seemed to have failed to reach it. For good news came to us just as to them, but the message they heard didn't benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. For we who believed entered the rest. Don't just hear the good news and say, well, I got to go work harder. Then you're missing the good news. You're not believing the good news. So then, therefore, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. The real hope, the solution for Jephthah would have been to say, God, I've made a foolish vow. I've made a terrible mistake. But I'm not going to amplify that mistake by doing something that displeases you. Instead, I need you to give me this salvation. I need you to fix my broken vows. I need you to save me. Rent heart, renewed mind, rested hands. This is the freedom that comes from the gospel for your worst mistake. Today, no matter what it is, you don't have to tell, you don't have to confess it to me, you don't have to tell anybody, you just bring it to God. Let him fix your worst mistakes. He's done so with the blood of his precious son, Jesus Christ. I'd like the worship team to come back up this morning, and we sang this morning, Amazing Grace. That's what this is. This is the amazing grace that changes us, that saves us. Sing again this classic anthem with a little bit of a new chorus. New chorus in this version that sings of how the ransom, the redemption of God to save us. And as we sing this in our conclusion this morning, I'm praying for you that God liberates you from the fear, the guilt, the dread that has perhaps plagued you for way too long. So would you stand with me as I pray over you? And as I pray this prayer, if you're in that situation where you're saying, I have a worst mistake that I need to present before God, with every head bowed and eyes closed, as a step of faith, just reach out your hand, stretch out your hand, and I'll be praying especially for you this morning. Jesus, you see our hearts, our rent hearts, our hearts that are broken. Broken as a result of our failures, our sins, our rebellion, our rejection of your good pleasure and your good will. But Lord, as our hearts are broken now before you, we offer them to you, asking for your salvation, asking for your grace, asking for the blood of Jesus to wash away all of our sins, to renew our minds and have us rest in you. You're the only one, O Lord, who could save us. You're the only one who could fix our worst mistakes. So we declare this morning our trust in you. Jesus, we believe in you. We love you. We worship and we praise you. Amen.